This is URN Sport. Listening to Square Up, Scrum Down, the rugby podcast on URN.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to our second episode of Square Up, Scrum Down for this season. I'm your host, Jeremy Dyle, and I'm joined here in the studio by James, Ollie and Matt. This episode is going focusing around the start of the Super League, which will be coming up, and you'll be listening to our preview of teams to watch, certain transfers that we've picked out as ones which could be key this season, as well as potential underdogs and dark horses who could surprise everyone this season. Following that, we're then going to move on to our full breakdown discussion of the upcoming Six Nations tournament, including all of our analysis of each fixture, where we think the team's going to finish, and games that we think you should watch. So stay tuned for that. We're going to start off with the first discipline we'll be talking about, which is rugby league, and that is because the Super League is about to start off very soon. And James, we're going to now run through a couple of teams that we sort of want to pick out, a couple of talking points, obviously with the start of any season that we would be naturally wanting to start off with. So Leeds, defending champions for it, let's talk about then who we see. Well, we'll go in then straight from the off with the big one. Who would you see then as the potential favourites? Do you think Leeds can hold on to it again and win the title?
Well, on Leeds, there's been a lot of changes from their team that won the grand final in October 2017. They beat Castleford in the final, and the key kind of instrumental players in that Leeds side who were fantastic on the night was Danny Maguire, who's just made a move to Hull Kingston Rovers, and Rob Burrow, who's recently retired. Now, they've been two linchpins really of the Leeds side. They've been responsible for the club's most successful era in the mid to late 2000s. So losing those two influential players, you know, it can only really damage a side. It happened the previous season with Leeds when they lost Kevin Sinfield, Jamie Peacock and Kylie Lillywhite. They struggled to cope with the loss of key influential figures, but they brought in Richie Myler from the Catalan Dragons. He's an alright player. I wouldn't say he's the same level as Danny Maguire. And Brad Dwyer from the Warrington Wolves, similar kind of hooker. I don't think the squad that they've got in place is anywhere near as strong as it was the previous season, but with a coach like Brian McDermott and that winning culture that he's managed to build at Leeds, it'd be foolish to kind of dismiss them from the picture. They've done it on many occasions when people have written them off. They've come back, and you know, last season many people didn't expect them to win the competition in September, a month from the season's conclusion, and they went on to win it. So I wouldn't write them off fully. My favourites, and I'm a little bit biased because the team I support, but I'm going to put St Helens in the hat for the favourites this season. They ended last season superbly. Justin Holbrook came in midway through the season after Kieran Cunningham was sacked. Got Saints nice and solid initially, started playing a more expansive style of rugby, which is what the Saints fans have craved for so many years and what we're kind of known for. And probably the key reason we haven't made many transfers in the off season, but towards the end of last season we brought in Ben Barber, who on his day is probably the best player in the world. He's come in, his contract is to the end of this season, about to begin. Last season he started off indifferently really, his form wasn't brilliant, but towards the end of last season he looked like a top player. And if Holbrook, who he's worked with before, can get the best out of him, I don't see any reason why Saints can't finish top of the pile and go all the way this season.
Yeah, I don't actually follow rugby league that close, though, I will admit, but I think probably St Helens is probably the team I would be supporting because it is actually very close to where I was born, so it probably naturally for me would fit into that. And it's also where my mum was from and one of my best mates, so probably for me that would be the one I would be ties into. And I have heard over the past sort of few years the murmurings of St fans, like you say, you know, they are disappointed sometimes with some of the styles they've been playing. It hasn't really been what they kind of feel they should how they should be playing, so that is promising to hear then for Saints. What about then looking though at some of the more the traditional powerhouses we often look see though with the Super League? Are you looking at your, for example, the Hulls and Huddersfields? Do you think do you look at any of them as potentially a dark horse maybe for this season?
Well, I think, you know, if you're talking about the big clubs, if you like, in the division, Hull won the Challenge Cup last season for the second season in a row, got to the semi-finals, the playoff semi-finals, and were defeated by Leeds. They've lost Gareth Ellis, who's retired. He was their captain last season and had been a really, really good signing for them. And also Mane Fanua, who is one of the most dynamic wingers in the competition. He's gone over to the NRL. So from that perspective, you'd think they'd struggle, but Lee Radford has recruited well. They've brought in a number of players from Australia, a number of Pacific Islanders who, you know, Hull have got a reputation of having really strong players coming from Samoa, coming from Fiji. They've brought back Mickey Pia as well, who'd been a fantastic player for them a few years ago. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the mix. Warrington, Tony Smith, he parted company with the club at the end of the season. They've lost a number of players, but they've also they've brought in Steve Price from the NRL. He's a coach. I don't know what kind of style he's going to bring to Warrington. One of the criticisms of Smith towards the end of his reign was that he was kind of that Warrington were known under Smith for playing a really attacking brand of rugby, but towards the end of his reign, when results weren't going particularly as well, it was a bit more route one, shall we say, which was the reason why he parted company with the club. But they brought in Ben Murdoch-Masilla from the Salford Red Devils, and he's one of the most exciting players in the Super League. So it's 50-50 with Warrington where they're going to finish. And for Wigan, they had a very disappointing season last year. They lost in the Challenge Cup final, and they also missed out on the playoffs, losing on the final day of the season to Wakefield. They've also lost two really influential players in Michael McAlorum, who's gone to the Catalan Dragons, and Anthony Gelling, probably their two most dynamic players in a team that's, you know, full of really powerful forwards but not really much guile or creativity. So I would expect them to finish in a similar position this season. But for me, the dark horse for the competition would be Hull KR, Hull FC's great rivals. They were promoted from the Championship last season. They've signed Danny Maguire, as I talked about earlier, from Leeds, a winner. Still a terrific player. I'm surprised Leeds let him go. And they've also got a number of young, hungry players coached by former Australian head coach Tim Sheen. So, and you know, we only have to, you can look at the football comparisons of teams that have come up from the Championship. They've got a lot of momentum behind them when it comes to the big time. And I wouldn't be surprised if Hull KR are the dark horse this season.
Speaking of football comparisons, though, I'd just like to go back to your team, St Helens. I mean, I'm not a huge rugby league fan, but from what I've seen of St Helens, they strike me as sort of the Arsenal of rugby league. Seem to always continuously do quite well, but always fall at the final hurdle. They don't seem to have won much silverware. And I know about Ben Barber because I've watched a few YouTube videos of him over the years, and he does seem like an absolutely incredible player. I mean, in that video, some of the things he does with the rugby ball were incredible. And like you said, I think on his day, he looks like he could be one of the best players in the world. So do you think with his inclusion that could perhaps be the difference for St Helens this season?
I think so. I mean, Saints' history in the Super League, Super League began in 1996, and from the first decade of Super League, Saints were the dominant side, played the best rugby, had the best players. But within the last decade or so, in terms of the amount of silverware we've won, it's been limited, to say the very least. Kind of Wigan and Leeds have kind of dominated the sport in recent times, and we've lacked a real X-factor player. In those early years, we had a contingent of players, local players, in Kieran Cunningham, Paul Schoolfoot, Sean Long, outstanding players, you know, who could have played for any team in the world. But we haven't really had a genuine world-class player other than James Robey, I would say. Ben Barber fits that category. He's somebody who gets on well with the coach. Saints' attack will be built around him. This season, it was towards the end of last season, and we looked really, really dangerous. And, you know, I was just watching highlights from our last pre-season game that was against Lee at the weekend, and Barber looked fantastic. I mean, there are still problems that he faces under the high ball, teams will target him this season like they targeted Sam Tompkins when he came back from the NRL. You know, high kicks on the last tackle, grubbers into the in-goal area, which will really put him under pressure. But from an attacking perspective, there isn't a greater fullback, in my opinion, in the competition. So Saints are going to be one to watch, I think.
Yeah, 1996, very good year. My brother as well. That's interesting. Now, you've already touched on there, though, James, just a couple of the key transfers that you've picked up in terms of this. Are there any other ones that you would say particularly fans of the Super League should keep their eye on? Any players that you think actually, or any players that could have a breakout year, maybe?
I think, in terms of one team that has done a lot of business, are Castleford. Castleford last season had a really terrific year. They came top of the division. They played the most exciting rugby that the competition has seen for a long time. They lost in the grand final, though. It was quite a humiliating defeat after a brilliant season. And they've made lots of signings. They've brought in James Clare, Mitch Clark, Jamie Ellis, James Green, a lot of British players, which, you know, Darryl Powell has got a core of young, exciting British players within his side, but they've also lost a couple of key players from last season, like Andy Lynch and Joel Monaghan. Both have been released and subsequently retired. So I'd be interested to see how those new players do, because they might not be on paper names that stand out, like Ben Murnock-Masilla that I talked about earlier, or Lewis Tierney, who Catalan have brought in, or, you know, a number of other names that I've mentioned. But Darryl Powell has the ability to get the best out of players who, you know, might not on the surface seem that, you know, bigger name or greater player. So I'd keep an eye on the recruitment at Castleford. I think if Powell can get, you know, them all singing from the same hymn sheet, who knows what they can achieve again next season.
Okay, well, that's going to be then where we are going to leave our discussion on the Super League preview and of the Rugby League. Now let's move on then to the bulk of this show, which is going to be us talking about the Six Nations that's about to kick off. This is going to be our big Six Nations preview, and we'll start off then by looking at a couple of fixtures, running through those, as well as then probably moving on to more gradual discussions about each team, how we think they're going to finish, probably ultimately in the tournament. And I suspect we will probably round off by inevitably talking about how we think England are going to do and our hopes for them, as they are, for most of us, our home team. So this weekend, things get underway with the Six Nations, and the first of the games is going to be Wales at home against Scotland. That will be kicking off at 1:45 p.m. You can see all these games, I believe, as well on BBC One and ITV as well, and they will also be broadcast by the subsequent radio stations. So any game that's on ITV, you can catch on 5 Live, and we'll be discussing all of them, I'm sure, afterwards. So yes, Wales versus Scotland, first game, which will be kicking off. In years gone by, we've said that's tough, but I think now actually quite a few people are pointing towards maybe a sort of, as a turning of the tide, a different team we would pick as the winner for it. I'll throw things over to you first, Ollie, for who you would pick as the winner for it. I think it's the same person, a team I have in mind, though.
Yeah, so this is probably the first time for at least a decade where Scotland have gone into the game against Wales as firm favourites. I think you've only got to look at the autumn internationals from both teams. Scotland obviously had a fantastic victory over Australia, their best ever. They run the All Blacks as close as they ever have done before, and as close as any side has done for a while now. Wales, on the other hand, struggled. I mean, they barely beat Georgia, and I think it's clear to see that both teams are going through a transition phase. Wales are losing a lot of their key, more experienced players. You only need to look at their starting 15 at the weekend, and there's no Sam Warburton, no Toby Faletau, no Dan Lydiot, no Dan Bigger, no George North either, which is going to be a huge loss. You look at their team on paper, and there's 10 Scarlets players which are all starting, and there's also Josh Adams, a player from Worcester, who's making his debut. So I think that goes to show sort of how much they're struggling at the minute, really. The fact that they've got 10 players from one domestic side, I mean, Scarlets are obviously having a fantastic season domestically, but the fact that they have lost so many key players goes to show that they're definitely not a formidable force that they were a few years ago. Scotland, on the other hand, ever since Greg Townsend took over, have been a force to be reckoned with. They've definitely got some of the best players in the world in Stuart Hogg, and I think Hugh Jones is definitely one of the most underrated players in world rugby at the minute, and his name definitely hasn't been talked about enough. The one thing I would say about Scotland is I don't think many people are talking about how much they're going to struggle with their forwards. Their main hooker, Ross Ford, as well as their main prop, WP Nell, who are both Lions. They're both out injured, so I think they're going to struggle in that sense. Also, I think we can't discount the fact that Wales have home advantage, so it's going to be an interesting one. But I think, yep, Scotland are rightly favourites going into this game, and if I was going to back a team, it would be Scotland for this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Scotland have been in such strong form. Admittedly, their form has mostly been at home. They have only won away in Italy in the Six Nations in recent times. So there'll be anything to aim at. So that's the one barrier they have to get over in my mind. But yeah, you have to say Scotland are favourites with their form. Wales obviously starting to rebuild their team. They were strong perhaps 5 years or so ago with some really experienced and solid players like Lee Harpenny, Jamie Roberts, George North. But obviously a less experienced team, and in the Six Nations can be a risky thing to put forward. And you'd have to say that Scotland were probably the favourites. I wouldn't say it would be an absolute thrashing, but I think Scotland would win comfortably.
I think this game will really set the tone for either team's tournament, because a Scotland victory, I'm right in saying that Scotland have got to go to Ireland as well in this tournament.
Yeah.
A victory in Wales will give them a hell of a lot of confidence going into the remainder of the tournament, and give them the faith that they can go to Ireland and pick up a similar result. A defeat kind of, it crushes really those kind of that optimism that is surrounding the Scotland camp at the minute. For Wales, one thing that I would say is Ollie was, you know, saying that having 10 players from the same side might be a negative. It could turn out to be a positive. You know, it's players who they know how each other works. There's a bit of cohesion there already within the side. But by the sounds of it, there is a lot of inexperience within that Wales team. And in such a competitive tournament and in such an important opening game which really sets the tone and defines your tournament, you need experience, and you need you need experience of the Six Nations environment, and Wales don't have that. So I'd agree with the lads and go for a Scotland victory at the weekend.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement here that we think Scotland will win, but it'll be interesting if they do obviously lose to Wales. Will that affect them then throughout the rest of the tournament? Will that really, like you just said there, James, will that really bring them down? Because they have been riding high, it has to be said, ever so much on this fantastic way. Brilliant results that they put in the Autumn Internationals. Speaking of Ireland, their first match is also this Saturday. They are taking on France away at the Parc de France. So, I mean, I think we would all probably be looking at an Ireland victory here, boys. But the question is, are the Ireland team strong enough to overturn England and to regain their crown that they lost a few years ago?
No, is the short answer. Yes, they've got their fortress at the Aviva Stadium, and they've obviously beat England in the last Six Nations. But I think away from home, their form has been lacking. I mean, you look at the strength that Eddie Jones has put into the England team. I think they've won 23 out of 24 matches that he's had under them, which is ridiculous, really. And he is just such a constant driver in making England better and stronger. I think England have got more strength and depth as well than Ireland to start from. They've lost a couple of players. Johnny Sexton's been hit by injury. Tommy Bowe's retired. So the depth's not there that it was in Ireland. They still have some good players, and I think they'll do well, but I don't think they'll be able to challenge England for the title.
I'm actually inclined to disagree with Matt on that one. I think England will ultimately win the Six Nations, in my opinion, but I think that's mainly the fact that they're at Twickenham against Ireland this year, which is going to be pivotal. I think last year, if Ireland had home advantage again like they did last year, then maybe they'd go into the game as favourites. But I do think home advantage is going to be crucial for England. In terms of Ireland's strength and depth, though, I think they've got phenomenal strength and depth. I think they've got the balance of more experienced players combined with youngsters coming through that Wales don't seemingly have at the minute. They've got their crucial members in Rory Best still there. A lot of their back row, Sean O'Brien, they're still going strong. Their second rows in Ian Henderson, still a formidable player. But at the same time, they've got a lot of youngsters coming through. Gary Ringrose is injured, which is unfortunate, so he probably won't be back until round three, but should be fit for the England game. But they've got a lot of other youngsters in the likes of Joey Carberry, and a fly half who I've forgotten the name of, and I've completely lost it, but he's been in formidable form for Leinster this season. We've also got to touch on the Irish domestic teams, I think, in Munster and Leinster, who are by far and away the two best teams in Europe at the minute. They've been absolutely killing their respective groups in the Champions Cup, and they look fairly unstoppable at the minute. So I think Ireland definitely have enough to beat England. I don't think they will do this year, so I think ultimately it's going to come down to how they perform in other matches. Obviously Scotland have home advantage against England, so that could be a crucial one. And Ireland have home... No, they don't. Does Scotland have home advantage against Ireland as well? Sorry, that's... lost on me.
I can tell you in about
Scotland,
30 seconds.
Ireland will be hosting the Scotland.
That's what I thought, sorry. So, yeah, it's going to go down to those matches as well. But ultimately, I think England are going to take it. But Scotland are good enough on their day to beat England still.
Yeah, I think definitely the last couple of years, I think Ollie's right in highlighting that the gap between England and the other teams has got closer in the last couple of years. And you'd have to say that Ireland and Scotland are a lot closer to England in terms of challenging them, especially at home, than they were. Sadly, it seems that the role has been reversed a bit. Obviously, Italy's still pretty dire, really, and Wales and France have really dropped off the pace, as we've mentioned. So I think that Scotland have really become one of the top three teams in the Six Nations. And I've got a feeling that if anyone was going to beat England this year for the title, I think it might be Scotland. I think they've got... I know this. The script feels right. It's all I can say. I have a gut feeling.
The stars might align and all that. Yeah, well, I mean, that's... we will obviously be keeping an eye to see how they do. But, I mean, interesting, guys. I wouldn't be giving them a chance in this game. I think it's safe to say, from what I'm gathering, none of you are. But I think France, we're definitely writing off for this one, because France can be... very France, in the sense that you never know what team will turn up. They will either dazzle you with some of the greatest rugby you will ever see, with runs from their touchline to get a miraculous try, or they will implode and have an argument with themselves on the pitch and just be absolutely shambolic. It is very hit and miss with them, and it hasn't looked good in the last couple of tournaments, and it doesn't look like that could change. Will they be competing now with Italy for the wooden spoon?
I think so, yeah. France's decline from world rugby in recent years has been even greater than that of Wales. A lot of their key experienced members of their squad have since retired, and some of their better, more reliable players have seemingly lost form. I mean, the likes of Louis Picamole hasn't even been picked for their squad, and he was an ever-present, reliable member of their squad for years. The likes of Thierry Dusatoir has retired. Aaron Ordicky, he was a heart of the French back row for so long, he's long gone now. And a lot of their sort of key superstars, you might say, and Bryce Delaney and Wesley Fofana are out injured. So I really, you look at that France team, and there really doesn't seem to be a standout player. There really doesn't seem to be many players who you think are superstars now. And yeah, I really can't see them challenging. They don't seem to have the home advantage that they used to have in recent seasons. They're under new management now. Again, I've forgotten the name of the coach, but this is his first game in charge, so it'll be interesting to see how they adapt to that one. But I definitely can't see them challenging this season, and indeed for a couple of years to come at least.
The important thing, though, for the other five nations is, when approaching the game against France, they have to go there with a respectful mentality, because we've seen in the past teams when they've taken on Italy and they've kind of gone there with the expectation of an easy victory, and although they've probably got to that easy victory in the end, it's been a tricky game. I'm sure it was in last year's tournament when Italy gave England a bit of a game at Twickenham. You can't underestimate France's quality, particularly away from home. So that would be, the word of warning that I would say for Ireland is they have to go with a mentality that respects that there are some good players within that France team, but they have to. I think we all agree that it should be a comprehensive victory for them.
I think I remember that match, actually, the game at Twickenham, and I could be wrong here, but I do remember I went round to a friend's house to watch it, and between me leaving sort of just as kickoff started to getting round to it, I remember that Italy were ahead and sort of getting round and wondering what on earth was going on.
Yeah, I was actually at that game sitting in the crowd, and I had absolutely no idea what was going on, because historically Conor O'Shea sort of found a loophole in the rugby rules, in the sense that the Italy players... they didn't commit anyone to a ruck, weren't technically allowed to be offside. So there was 80,000 English fans in the stadium not having a clue what was going on, thinking the referee was having the worst game of his life, when in reality Italy had done nothing wrong. It caused a lot of controversy. Eddie Jones, the England coach, said that it wasn't the way rugby should be played and Italy should be ashamed of themselves. But ultimately, yeah, England went into that game underestimating Italy and got very, very lucky to come out with a victory. Subsequently, the rules have actually changed. There's going to be no chance that Italy can do that to England again this year. But I think Italy are definitely going to be up for it, because a lot of people didn't give them the credit they deserved in that game. So I think Conor O'Shea is definitely going to be keen to try and prove the fans and the world of rugby wrong on Sunday. So it's going to be interesting. But like James said, England definitely shouldn't underestimate the Italians, even though they are going to go into the game as firm favourites.
Yeah, well, that's a game against Italy there. Will be England, where they will be travelling to Rome. That match will be kicking off at 3 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. You can see it on ITV and also on BBC Radio 5 Live. So that is going to be one of the matches that we are definitely going to be hoping England will have that determination to avenge. I mean, it wasn't a humiliation. It was sort of the fact England were made to look a bit like fools, I think it's safe to say, Ollie, with that kind of that loophole that they managed to find. I remember it, when we discussed it on the Tuesday show that week, it sparked a very vivid argument from some of us saying that it was perfectly fine to do because it's technically in the rules, and some say, no, that's not... basically taking Eddie Jones' side, saying that shouldn't be how rugby should be played. Eddie Jones has told his team, apparently, in his press conference beforehand, that he wants them to go in with a real fighting spirit and not to let the fact that they are favourites again get the best of them, because it came across at times, I think it has to be said, last year. It was sort of a slight arrogance we saw occasionally from England. But anyway, that's going to be the first week of fixtures. I think we are predicting then a Scotland, Ireland, England win, which I suspect will be probably the general reverse order. We are thinking that this tournament will finish in, with Scotland potentially finishing third, Ireland potentially in second, and England potentially, hopefully, and from a loss of us with touchwood, finishing top of the tree. Moving then on to the next weekend after, we have Ireland versus Italy. Again, guys, I think we're looking at another win there for Ireland. The two big games, though, for that are there's the match on Sunday, obviously, between Scotland and France. Again, we never know with France, so that will be very interesting to see what happens with them. But the big one is England. Their first game at Twickenham of the series is against Wales. Obviously, Wales fans will hope they can repeat that match from several years ago where they stopped England getting the Grand Slam by rather humiliating England. But like we said, guys, it's a very different team from that Welsh one that was able to inflict that embarrassing defeat to England.
Yeah, well, I mean, Wales historically love playing England. I think it's fair to be said. You've touched on that that match which denied England the Grand Slam a few years ago, which was, like you said, humiliating. We've also got to look at the 2015 World Cup with England having home advantage at Twickenham and somehow managing to lose, having had a 10-point lead at half time. A match which I will never forget.
That was the worst moment. I remember I was in Vesper here on campus watching that, and it just turned over suddenly.
Oh, it was absolutely horrendous watching it. I'm never going to forget it.
I just remember watching it with some friends and just sitting in almost shock and disbelief at what was happening. And as you said, I think the England-Wales rivalry in the Six Nations is potentially the biggest one out of all of them, and there's definitely no love lost between the two teams. And whenever one can get the edge over the other one, as England have at the moment, it's a great feeling to beat Wales. And it was also good for me at school when England beat Wales, because it meant I could give my Welsh philosophy teacher, who's a massive rugby fan, a bit of stick about their rugby.
Yeah, in recent seasons, though, I think it's fair to be said, since Eddie Jones has taken over, England have been fairly clinical against Wales. I think we've beaten them three or four times now, because I think there's been a couple of friendlies in between the Six Nations which England have had, where they've comprehensively beat Wales. Again, I think the fact that the game's at Twickenham is going to play into England's hands. If it had been at the Millennium Stadium with 80,000 Welsh fans sort of booing the English players, I think there would have been a lot more pressure on the England players' shoulders. But I think they should win this game fairly comfortably. I think one thing which has to be mentioned, though, which not enough people have addressed, is that the absence of Billy Beanipola for England could be crucial. He's been one of England's best players for years now. He's now an experienced lion as well, and he's probably going to be out the entirety of the Six Nations. We've also got Nathan Hughes, who's probably not going to return until midway through the series at least. So I think the responsibility is going to fall onto the young Zach Mercer's shoulders, the number 8 who plays for Bath. He's been in fine form this season, but a lot of people have questioned his temperament. He seems to have an anger problem, similarly to the likes of Joe Marler, so it's interesting to see how he fares, considering I think he's only got one cap so far to date. So yeah, that's going to be interesting to see, but overall I would still back England to win fairly comfortably in the end.
Okay, so we're looking at an England victory there against Wales, and all of a sudden my screen has just gone blank. One second, there we go. Scotland and France, though, again, I think, like we said, we're looking at probably Scotland most likely to win there, especially considering they have home advantage, so they will probably be winning that match against the French. Moving then on, obviously, there is then the customary break in proceedings for the Six Nations, that short period, obviously, where there's a week off, then games restart for another period. That will be starting off then on Friday. We will have France versus Italy. The battle for the wooden spoon will surely be taking place then in Paris to determine who is finishing bottom of the pile, unless, of course, the either team are prepared to prove all of us wrong in the studio and pull off an absolute wonder performance. We've been proven wrong before, and I'm sure we'll be proven wrong again, it has to be said. Then the Saturday's fixtures are very, very important games. Two massive massive matches. The early kick, the early of the two games at 2:10 p.m. will be in Dublin, and this is Ireland hosting Wales, a big match that has to be said. And then, of course, the one which everyone will be watching, I'm sure, is going to be the real test of how strong Scotland are at home at 4 p.m. on Saturday, 24th of February. It is Scotland hosting England. Both of those games are huge, guys, for this tournament. We are starting to come towards the tail end, but we will probably, I think, finish on this as the first part of our review and preview to the Six Nations, but by just looking at these two potentially series-defining games we could be looking at here. In fact, that could be a series-defining day, it's safe to say.
Yeah, I think the Scotland-England game is by far and away undoubtedly the most pivotal match of the Six Nations. I would probably back Ireland to beat Wales earlier on in the day, and I think if you sort of imagine a table from that, Ireland will be sitting at the top with 3 wins out of 3, with England and Scotland just below them having won both of their games. If England lose that game, that will probably place them third in the table with 2 games to go, including another game against Ireland, and I can't see them recovering from that. On the other hand, if they win that, they'll probably move to joint first in the table, and that game against Ireland will define who ultimately wins the Six Nations. So it is absolutely pivotal. You'd have to look at Scotland. If they do manage to get victories against Wales in their opening game, you'd probably have to look at them as favourites. I've spoken about home advantage so much in the last few minutes, but I think that could be the defining factor. I think we've spoken about Scotland's performances at Murrayfield and how strong they've been there in recent years, and if their superstars play well, then yeah, they could cause an absolutely huge upset.
Yeah, I mean, Stuart Hogg and Greg Laidlaw are probably the two biggest superstars for Scotland. They've got the ability to change matches with their play. I think Stuart Hogg is unquestionably the best fullback in the Six Nations. I think Greg Laidlaw's up there for the best scrum half, and I think it's those sort of players who can really turn on the match on his head with a picked out pass, a dummy, a try, a drop kick. You know, you never know what with those players. So I think if Greg Laidlaw and Stuart Hogg have exceptional tournaments, Scotland could go all the way.
And the atmosphere at Murrayfield has the ability to kind of carry teams through. I think we were talking about Scotland's home form earlier. It's been incredible since Gregor Townsend has taken over then. And that could carry them through and intimidate the England players. But that already kind of looks like the standout fixture from the tournament, and one that could decide where the titles go in. And I'm already really looking forward to it.
Yeah, that is certainly then going to be a day to keep your eye on for the rugby. We're going to then just breeze through very quickly the rest of the fixtures as we're looking at them. Then after that match on Saturday the 24th of February, there is then another week break before action then resumes on Saturday the 10th of March. Ireland hosting Scotland, a huge game that will be. And on the same day, England will be travelling to Paris to take on France. The old rivalry will be fully enforced there. And again, another big day, but I think it's safe to say the 2 weeks beforehand, we will have seen which way this series could be going. Those matches afterwards will very much determine, I think, some of the other placings within the table, specifically that Ireland Scotland game is certainly the one to keep an eye on. And then finally, things will be wrapping up for the Six Nations on Saturday the 17th of March. I'm sorry, I should have said as well, Wales will be hosting Italy on Sunday the 11th of March, which will be kicking off at 2:30. And then on Saturday the 17th of March, games will be running in this order. Italy will be taking on Scotland in Rome, so we will be probably expecting that to be a Scottish win. Then I will skip the most important one, I have to just say, because I'm building up for dramatic effect. Wales will be playing against France at the Millennium Stadium at 4:30 will be their kickoff. But the game of the day, and certainly the one that I think everyone will be keeping their eye on for it, potentially the deciding match of this 2018 Six Nations tournament, will be taking place at 3:15 on Saturday the 17th of March, which will be England hosting Ireland. The game that could be very well decide if England can retain their crown, and that is going to be the match which... There's been a lot of ones for free pickers match of the tournament. That's probably not the match of the tournament, and it's probably not the day of the tournament, but it's probably going to be the one which all the stories will be focusing on as it rolls around and builds up towards. But that is going to be it then for our review of the Six Nations.
This is URN Sport.